please welcome to the stage the Batman, Kevin Conroy.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Ish Misha Gyaltada. Ish Misha Aniha. Ish Misha Batman.
Jeremila Margot.
Welcome, sir. Are you well rested?
I was hammered yesterday. I mean, it was incredible. The lights. I was the last one out of this building last night. I closed the building. At 7, they have to throw me out.
Well, if you're going to get somebody to close the building, you get Batman to close
the
building.
There you go.
You know?
No, everybody's been wonderful. The Dublin community is just so great.
Because you've been here a while. You dropped in like middle of this week, and you've been doing a little tour around the place.
Yeah, no, I came back a week ago. I came in a week ago. So we've just been hanging around Dublin. Last time I came a week early, was it 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
It would have been 3 years ago.
The first Comic-Con. And rented a car. And as a kid, I spent a lot of time in Ireland growing up. I'm a dual citizen. My grandparents were all from Ireland. But I hadn't been here since I was like 17. I hadn't been here in a long time. So I thought, I'll rent a car and I'll drive around the island. And I forgot that the roads in this country are like this wide, and that there are rock walls on either side, and that these lorries come at you at 70 miles an hour. So I lost the side view mirror so many times on this car. Here, boom, the mirror would go. So you know, you're kind of driving along, and you're going, oh, just let me go, you know? There was actually a road in Dingle that is suddenly went one way. We were driving around this cliff, and suddenly it turned into a one-way road. And there was this truck coming at me. So I had to back up, with a cliff on one side and a rock wall on the other. I did it. So this time, we decided just to stay in Dublin and not deal with the driving. Had a great time.
Because you were posting on Twitter, you were in Tampa Bar, and then you were at Bray, and somebody then took that picture of you in Bray, and then, you know...
Wasn't that great?
Yeah, the bat signal.
They put the bat signal over Bray. It was great.
So the turnout for you this weekend has been mental, because you are, for our generation, for my generation, I know we have the actors who portrayed Batman on screen, but when anyone in my generation thinks of Batman, you're always the person we talk about.
Thank you.
You are the voice of Batman for pretty much a generation. But you've crossed over that now. You started obviously with the animated series, but there's also the games, and then the movies have happened as well, and they keep happening. And is there a joy that you're able to keep the character going and be Batman for as long as you've been?
It's such a wonderful character to be associated with, because he's such a complicated character, you know? There's so many levels to him, so there's always more to explore, I find. People say, don't you get tired of playing the same character for 25 years? And I honestly don't. He's such a complicated guy. It's such a rich character to explore. That there are always more levels. There's always more stuff to find. Like, who ever thought he would sing, you know? When they had me sing Am I Blue, I thought, this just can't be happening. You know? So there's always stuff to do with the character. The challenge for 25 years has been to keep it fresh. Not to get stale, not to phone it in. Because, you know, with hearing, it's a funny thing about lying. People can, I think, think about this in life. I think you can hear a lie a lot faster than you can see a lie. Someone can fool you, but you can hear it when they're lying. So people can hear in a heartbeat if I wasn't being genuine with the character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and Andrea Romano was so wonderful. She really kept on me, always being sure I was being true to the character. So that's been the challenge over 25 years, is to keep it fresh, to not let it get stale. I think my theater background really helped me in that sense, because in the theater, part of the trick is creating the role, but then the second part of the trick is doing it 8 times a week and making each time you do it be the first time because each night it's the first time for that audience to see you. And so it's got to be immediate. It's got to be fresh. It's got to be alive. That's half the trick of performing on stage. So I think that served me well in doing this role for so long.
And as you mentioned, Andrea, she's now retired.
Yeah.
Only recently. And as a fan, I've seen her. Like, she has brought people in and out of the Batman universe, but the key characters have always stayed. It's always been, for the majority of times, it's been you and Mark.
Yeah.
Back and forth. I know Troy Baker came in for a bit, and I interviewed Troy about it as well. I interviewed Troy Baker a couple of years ago, and he was
very talented guy.
He was telling me. He said he was so scared about it, but you guys are so welcoming,
and rightly so.
But it must be intimidating for other actors to come in, and they come and go at different roles throughout it, and they get guest characters playing certain roles. But you and Mark have been there for so long. Your dynamic. Again, when people say Kevin Conroy is Batman, a lot of people say Mark Hamill's the Joker.
Yeah, he is. He is. He's created that character for me. I wish you could see him when he's in the booth. He becomes the Joker. He literally, his face is like rubber. I was talking about this yesterday. I think Mark was a victim of his own youthful good looks. Mm. You know, when in the business you get categorized. So much, and it's hard to break out of type for actors. And his type when he was young was young leading man, because he was a really good-looking guy. But as his face aged and as he aged, he's still a very handsome man, but he's not that, you know, boyish good looks anymore. So he was able to grow into what I think he really is, which is a character actor.
Yeah.
He's a character actor, and he can just become these wild characters. And it's so much fun to watch an actor transform that way. And the wonderful thing about Mark, too, is he's a very generous actor. You know, actors are people. There are generous ones, selfish ones, mean ones, nice ones, ones you want to know, and ones you really don't want to know. You know, they're people. And Mark is just one of those generous, kind people who loves it when you're good because he knows that's going to make him better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I love when he's good because I know I'm going to give a better performance.
It was very heartwarming recently when you guys reunited for The Killing Joke, and there was the picture of you guys hugging that hit the internet. And I think the fandom was just, it was literally a fist raised in the air from the fandom to see us back together.
Yeah. That was titled The Bromance.
Have you faced challenges with the character over the years as it's changed, as the media has changed, as the world has changed? Have you had to adapt Batman to that role as what he is?
The biggest transition for me was from the dramatic shows to the games. Gaming is something that's really very recent in the industry. It's so recent that people are still kind of catching up to it in terms of contracts and stuff like that. The studios make more from games now than they do from films. It's huge. Arkham made $1 billion with a B. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. So it's a whole new form of working. Because it's so scientific, they need a completely clean take of everything. So for an actor, you know, acting is a very messy business. There's a lot of interaction, there's a lot of emotion. So when Mark and I are in the booth together, or when the other actors and I are in the booth together, it's like when you're a kid, you know, and you're playing ball. You can give and take, you can throw the ball, throw it back, and you're all in the booth together, and there's a lot of interaction. And the only thing you have to be aware of is going off mic. You know, you have to stay on mic. So everyone's very aware of the mic, but other than that, you can do anything you want in there. You know? And there's a lot of childishness in actors. And I think the more childishness, the better, because it makes you spontaneous. That childlike quality is what you want. But when you're doing a game, they need a completely clean take for everything. So you have to record alone. So you get none of that energy from the other actors. So you're only feeding yourself. So you're keeping the character alive. You're imagining the situation in your head, you're keeping that alive, and then you're giving them the various readings they want for each line, you know?
Get in the Batmobile.
Oh, can we have it with more anger?
Get in the Batmobile!
Oh, keep the anger now, a little irony.
Get in the Batmobile.
Literally! And then that for 4 hours, and then you get an hour break, and then 4 hours in the afternoon, and that's a day. And you do that for a week alone. And by the end of the week, you sort of forget how to speak English, you know? It's like the words aren't coming out anymore. And you're still trying to keep the character alive. You're still trying to keep the energy up. You're still trying to keep it fresh. But you're feeding yourself through the whole thing. And Arkham Knight, the last game, had 37,000 lines of dialogue. It was like doing Tolstoy. I mean, it was massive.
Wow, that's insane.
And it took 2 years to build. So I was in that booth for 2 years, basically, off and on, alone. So that's not why you go to Juilliard. You know what I mean? When you want to be an actor as a teenager, you're not thinking you're going to end up in a booth being alone, sort of goofing around by yourself. You know, it's just not, it's not why you get into the business. But then I go and I see the game and I play it and I look at it and I think, I am a part of this. You know, it's so, I'm so proud to be a part of it, and I'm so proud of my performance, and it's something I can look at and you know, with pride.
Yeah.
So I love doing it, but I don't love the process of doing it. The process is crazy.
Is it humbling or comforting in some way when you hear your fans' reactions to know that you're involved in those situations? Because I know for myself and my group of friends and anyone here, I'm sure, when they talk about the Batman games or anything Batman related that requires your voice, and when they hear you're doing the voice, I think I could probably speak for everyone. Everyone has said, straight, done. If Kevin Conroy is doing the voice, I'll take it. Thank you very much. Is there something in you that goes, yeah, thanks very much for that?
Yeah. The brainwashing worked. I get the minds when they're young, and I form them, and they'll be mine forever.
And as well, when you're switching, because in the animated series, we saw a lot of Bruce. Mm-hmm. So when you're switching Bruce's voice, because obviously you've got the baritone of Batman, but Bruce was always that slightly octave higher.
Yeah, it's more my voice.
Yeah, that's it. When people meet you, are they surprised that you're not like, hi?
Yeah. Yeah, especially when I say something like that.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, because it's a totally different sound. And originally, early on, like in '93, the Bruce Wayne and Batman voices were really dramatically different. Bruce Wayne, I played him like a real playboy. I used a David Niven image in my mind for kind of a real sophisticated, urbane, ironic, a lot of humor, because I thought it was a nice dynamic opposite Batman. You know, it made the distinction really dramatic. And the producers loved it. But then the footage started coming back from the artists. Because, you know, the first 6 months we were recording, we hadn't seen any footage. The recording goes first. We're the first step in the process, for those of you who don't know that. So we record like you're in a radio play. We're in a booth together. And so for the first 6 months, before any artwork had been done, we didn't know exactly what it was going to look like. We were doing it to sketches that they showed us the characters were going to be. But we didn't really know what the world was going to be like. So then when the artwork came back and we realized, oh my God, they're painting this on a black background. This is film noir. This is New York in like the 30s. This is dark, dark drama. Suddenly that light, ironic, sarcastic Bruce Wayne voice I was using was jarring. It just didn't fit. So they actually had me go back and re-record. Oh, they're leaving already. I'm losing my audience. No. They had me actually go back and re-record the first few episodes and just darken them. They still liked that there was a difference, but they just wanted a much less dramatic difference. So it wasn't quite as jarring. Thank you.
I need the water when I do the voice. You probably don't.
So, what else can I do?
When it came to the show, did they ever approach you for creative input, as in like the writing? Because obviously you know the character. Inside and out. Did the writers ever say to you, well, how do you want to do this story with Batman?
You've never met Bruce Timm.
Control freak.
Well, there's this myth that actors have big egos, you know.
The really big egos are the writers and the producers. These people have egos. And if you don't give Bruce the comma that he wrote, you're gonna hear about it. No, they like, they know what they want these shows sound like. But given that, then they let you kind of go crazy in the booth. And if you spontaneously do something different, they may keep it. Because it just comes out of improvisation and being crazy.
Yeah.
Well, Mark and I do that a lot. But they would never let us rewrite our lines.
And were they more strict with you than they were with Mark? Because Mark, obviously, being the Joker, being so manic.
Yeah.
But Batman did always have to toe the line of having that.
Yeah. Yeah, Batman is a man of few words. So part of the challenge was always conveying the power and the strength and the story with just a few words. But because of that, I couldn't embellish. He's not a guy who embellishes. Joker, on the other hand, you know, he can just go crazy with embellishment. And so Mark would go nuts. And it was fun to watch.
Were you surprised when characters like Harley Quinn, who debuted in the animated series, were you surprised to see how popular characters like that were?
Do you know that Harley Quinn is now the fourth most popular animated character? She's ahead of Wonder Woman, and I mean, she's up there with Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And she's hugely popular.
The new movie is out. Is it Monday? There's actually screenings tomorrow. In Dublin tomorrow, yeah. Tomorrow. And, like, it's not a surprise, obviously, because the character has done so well and acted so well. And there have been so many different actors that have portrayed her over the years. And I'm not going to ask you who your favorite was standing next to you. That's not fair. But are you, like,
I genuinely don't have a favorite. Like, I really don't have a favorite of the live-action Batman. I think it's really interesting when different actors play a role. I think Mark Hamill is Joker. He's the definitive Joker. He's brilliant Joker. And then I saw Heath Ledger. And he was brilliant, wild, crazy man, too. Not better, just different. You know, a different kind of crazy. And then Troy Baker comes along and does Joker, and he does a wonderful Joker too.
He does, yeah.
They're all just different. And the same with the live action Batman. I thought it was crazy that Warner Brothers didn't give the franchise to one person. They always build franchises around one actor, and then the audience identifies with that actor. Suddenly they were giving it from Michael Keaton to Val Kilmer to Christian Bale. I thought, what is going on? But then when I saw how differently each actor did it, I thought, this is really brilliant. They're all doing it slightly differently. And each with a different little take on it. And some are stronger than others, but they're all valid, you know? Mm. So Harley Quinn, originally was written for an actress named Arlene Sorkin, who's a wonderful actress. And Paul Dini, who created the character, he's in love with Arlene Sorkin, or he was then, before. Now he's happily married, but then he was in love with Arlene Sorkin. This is 25 years ago. So he created the character for her, and she's the embodiment of Harley Quinn. She was great. But then Tara Strong came along and gave a great Harley Quinn. And now in this new movie, it's Melissa Rauch from The Big Bang Theory, who nails it. She's fantastic. So they're all a little different, but there's that gum-chewing, wise-cracking, kind of crazy Harley in the middle of all of them that's so consistent.
And we'll open it up to the floor now in a couple of minutes just for questions as well, folks. So get your questions ready.
Sure.
I'm sure people have loads of things to ask, and there will be microphones going around. We'll have volunteers with the microphones going around too. But finally, just to ask one more question before we go to the audience. Do you find it's easy to slip back into the animated version compared to we talked about the video game version and the kind of the tedious or the long hours for that, but when the animated features come along, you just slip back into the character?
I really do. It's like a familiar friend. It's such an easy suit to put back on. He's such a, you know, he has no superpowers. He's just a very complicated guy. So for me, it's a wonderful character for an actor to play. Adam West said that when I first got the role. Well, the first time we worked together, he came in as the Grey Ghost, and I was a little nervous about, you know, treading on his territory. And he said, oh my God, he says, this is such a great character. You're gonna have so much fun with it. It's yours now, just run with it. He said, I had a blast doing it. It's your turn, just run with it. And he was right. It's just a fun role to play. Yeah.
Well, okay, folks. Who has questions? Right. Okay. We're gonna get to everyone. We have 25 minutes left in the panel. So, can we get the volunteers with Darren? You've got a mic. How many microphones have we got? We got a couple of microphones. So, can we spread the microphones out? Darren, you down this side. Kieran, you down this side. Over this side. Okay. Who else has got a microphone? Then over that side. Okay, Darren. We're gonna go with Derek first. Kieran, then this gentleman in the front row. Stand up, Derek.
Hi.
How you doing?
We have an upcoming story in the comics by the artist Sean Gordon Murphy called White Knight, where the Joker is the hero and Batman's the villain. Would you love to do an animated version where Batman is the villain and Mark Hamill
so
is the Joker?
That would be so much fun. Because that sort of started happening in The Killing Joke towards the end of it. You know, that crazy laugh at the end of it, that was me. So I would love that. In fact, I do have a new series coming out called Welcome to the Wayne. It's been on for a year, but I'm introducing a new character, and it's a villain. And he's a blast, he's crazy. And I love playing it. So yeah, so that would be a great thing to do.
All right, cool.
Betty! Get over here!
So your theory for the end of The Killing Joke, did Batman kill the Joker at the end?
I'm never going to say.
Oh! Hope nobody had that joke.
Hi.
Hello, Mr. Connor. Thank you for coming.
Where are you? Okay.
I wanted to ask, one of my favorite animated features is Batman Beyond, Return of the Joker. It gets very dark with Robin, and the relationship between Batman, Batgirl, and Robin in it is fascinating. I wanted you to tell us about how it was working on this project, and also having Mark Hamill and Wilfredo. This was like a bit the old and the new together.
Yeah.
So, yes.
The great thing about working with Will, the wonderful thing about Andrea Romano is she really does surround herself with not just talented actors, but generous actors who are very giving. Will is a great guy. We have a great relationship. He is very talented and he's very easy to work with. So Will and Mark and I was just sort of clicking into place. It worked so well together. What the challenge for me was, I had always been the center of the show, you know, as Batman the Animated Series and Batman and Robin. Suddenly I'm 80-year-old Bruce, and I'm kind of like, you know, well, what happened to my show? It's this kid's show now. Yeah. So you're kind of passing the torch on a little bit, you know what I mean? But no, I loved working with Will. It's the easiest thing in the world, and with Mark. Whenever we get together, it's kind of like kids in a playground. There's just such an ease to it. So I don't know what more I can tell you than that. Just that we all really work well together.
Over here. Do you want to stand up?
I can hear you.
Pat, have we got the... Yep, go ahead.
Well, what do you think? Are you ever annoyed with the Batman ripoffs, like, you know, Green Arrow and all those, which are basically just Batman under the sack?
Controversial.
Batman ripoff. No one's ever going to replace Batman. You know, I mean, come on. He's so cool. I don't know. I don't really have any opinion about the other superheroes.
I don't think Batman would either.
Huh?
I don't think Batman would either.
No, he's too cool. He's too confident. He's too complicated. Anyone else?
We go. Okay, we will get you guys. Don't worry.
Hi.
First of all, big fan.
Thank you.
I really love.
Thank you.
Anyway, here's my question. What is your favorite episode from the animated series? Not in terms of writing or story, but in terms of your performance, the one that you give out your best. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, I think my one. There are two. One is Mask of the Phantasm, which I think is the best Batman movie. But that scene at his parents' grave is one of my favorite scenes, he's, for those of you who haven't seen it, he's fallen in love. And you see the whole genesis of the Batman story. You understand the whole background in this movie, which is why I think it's such a great movie. And then he falls in love. And he goes to his parents' grave, and he's pleading with them to release him from the vow that he made to them to avenge their deaths. Because he suddenly realizes what life is about, and it's about love. And he realizes he can love. He wants to have a normal life. But just then, he realizes he can't. And then this flock of bats come screaming up out of the earth to reclaim him. And he realizes he can't escape his past. There's something so noble about the character of Batman, and that's why I think the audience relates to him so much, and why he's lasted for 75 years, whatever it is. There's such a pure nobility about him and his mission, and that's what the audience relates to. People love seeing that kind of purity and that kind of nobility in him. So that scene where he suddenly is questioning that journey, it's such a human moment. It's such a vulnerable moment. Acting is all about exposing your heart to the audience. It's all about making yourself as vulnerable as you can. The actors you really love are the ones that you see inside of, the ones who share a part of themselves with you. So any episode, any script where I get to do that are my favorites. And that was one moment. Perchance to Dream is a moment where he's dreaming. He's drugged and he goes back and he experiences childhood with his father. I just got to expose parts of Bruce Wayne in that for an actor, that's what it's all about. It's all about honesty. That's why there are certain actors you just gravitate towards. You just love them. You don't know why you love them. It's because they're so honest. They let you in. And you get to know them. And the better you are, the more you do that. I have people who just come up to me on the street and they say, you know, can I just hug you? Because you're like an old friend. You were there when I was a kid. And I'm always hugging strangers on the street. Because they feel like they know me. Which is, to me, it means that my work as an actor was successful. You know, I let them in.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier on. You are Batman to a generation, and even to the later generations. Like, you always will be the Batman. Kieran, we have a question over here. Who? Yeah, and then we're going to go over to Darren. Is there anyone up at the back? Okay, we got the microphone here as well. Okay, so we're going to go here, then to Liam, and then we're going to go here, and then we're going to go over here. Okay. You can stand up there. Stand up there.
I have a question.
Yeah.
You've come to work with many people over the years, like Mark Hamill and Troy Baker and all that, right?
Yeah.
And I wonder, how is it like when you meet people who you haven't really worked with since the animated series? I mean, the new movie with Batman and Harley Quinn, mm-hmm. you're working with the person who originally played Robin, then went on to Nightwing. From the animated series.
Lauren Lester, yeah.
I wonder how that feels when you meet people from the old series.
Well, it's like seeing an old friend. You pick up, you know, when you run into someone you haven't seen in years and you just pick up the sentence you left off on? That's what a lot of it's like with actors, like with Lauren Lester and with Mark Hamill, with Tara Strong, with various people that I've worked with a lot over the years. It's just like picking up a sentence. You just fit right into where you were, which is great. The challenge more is when you meet new people and you're going to establish dynamics with new actors. There's always a little bit of a territorial thing that happens with actors. And you're always kind of feeling out. Like when you meet someone new at work, you feel out how generous they are, how easy they'll be to work with. The nice thing about Warner Brothers is I know with Andrea, she always, as I said, casts really generous people, so I genuinely know it's going to be cool. Like Melissa Rauch was great, easy to work with. Paget Brewster, who does Poison Ivy in this, great, wonderful to work with. I'd never worked with either of them before. Those are brand new for me.
I'd worked with those characters for 25 years, but those were totally new actors for me. So it does shake up every now and then with new people coming in. There's always a few minutes of sort of feeling out the territory whenever you meet anyone new, like in life. I've been lucky with Warner Brothers. It's been a great group.
Well, I mean, Andrea, I'm sure she'll be sorry you missed, but she is renowned for being the voice.
The wonderful thing about Andrea is she started out as an actor. A lot of people don't realize that. And she studied acting in school. And she realized right away that that was not going to happen for her. And rather than beat her head against the wall for the rest of her life, she segued into, became an agent originally. And that led to casting, becoming a casting agent. And when you're in animation, the director, quote unquote, in an animated show isn't really the director. They're the casting person. They put the cast together and they sit in the booth with the producers and they direct the actors through the script. So director is kind of a loose term in animation. But because she came at it through acting, she has a great understanding of how actors think, what they need, the kind of information they need to get them into the right line reading. You never give a line reading to an actor because it'll always sound like what you told them to say rather than sounding organic. You want to lead them to it through thought so they come up with their own way of saying it, so it sounds spontaneous, so it sounds original. And they will usually surprise you and say it in a way you didn't think of that may be even better. So she's good at not giving you line readings, but at giving you motivation to get to the right place. And she also understands how actors' lives are very transitional. You never know when you're gonna work again. You'll have a great year, and then you'll have a lousy year, and then you'll have a great year again, and then you'll be out of favor for a number of years, and then suddenly you're hot again. So she knows how ephemeral it all is. And that means, that makes for a lot of very unstable people, you know? And so she's very good at handling these people. Me.
Liam, do you want to stand up?
Yes, right. Conroy.
Hey.
Kate Mia Falls, your girl's Margaret. Have yourself and Mark Hamill ever walked into a bar, put a pair of pints in front of you, and had a full-blown conversation as the Batman and the Joker? Because if that hasn't happened, Kevin, it needs to happen.
So, Batman and the Joker walked into a bar.
Anyway, that's the easy breezy one. Over the course of you portraying this iconic character, was there one moment that you just stopped and went, holy moly, I'm Batman?
I'm Batman?
You're Batman. Isn't he Batman?
Whoa.
Are you stoked?
I am. What makes Batman so iconic? Why does he resonate with people so much? I think it's because we're all freaks, don't you? Everyone has two faces. Everyone has a private life and a public life. Everyone feels like an outsider. We all feel like outsiders. Even the most powerful person in the world, there are moments when he feels like an outsider. Because we are alone. That phrase, you live alone, you die alone. You come into the world alone, you live alone, you die alone. And in between, you try to grab onto someone. That's what Batman is about to me. He's that sense of isolation, that sense of aloneness that so many, everyone has at one moment in their life or another. Someone came to my table yesterday and he said, you don't understand, I had a deep, deep dark depression that I went through and it was only through your show that I got out of it. And I said, you know,
Everyone goes through a dark night of the soul. That's part of life. The Irish writers have been writing about it forever. There's just that dark night of the soul that people go through. And the wonderful thing about Batman is he lives in that dark night. And he transforms it into something good. And this guy was saying, yeah, yeah. And that's what the man of mine. And I thought, what a wonderful thing to have a character do, an animated character. You know, the Greek mythology, Roman mythology, they had Orestes, they had Achilles, they had Iphigenia, they had Electra, to teach their kids morality. That's what they were all about. They were just teaching morality. We have Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. There are mythology. There are forms of teaching good and evil, right and wrong, nobility and cowardice. And he touches people that way. He's so, the sense of nobility is so great in this character. The sense of purity, that's what I love about playing.
Kevin Conroy, you're a legend. Thank you very
much. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee. And we're going, we have a question over here, and then we have a question over here, and then we had another guy over here as well. We're going to get to you. So here, here, and here.
How's it going?
Hey.
How you doing? I just wanted to quick ask, would you like Eminem?
I'm fine.
You waited that long to ask that.
You won that. Well, that is that your question?
Well, no, I actually want to ask you, you know when you talk about the other actors who play Batman in the live action film, have you ever thought of actually, at one point, you were one to actually play that, you know, Batman as a live action character instead of just doing the voice?
I would love to. It would be a blast. But you know, to be honest, I have a great advantage over those actors because I don't have to physically embody the character the way they do. I can just live it in my imagination and have my voice create the character. And let's face it, he's an animated character. So in a sense, he is a sound to art. He's an art character. So they're embodying an art character. So it's always going to look weird, you know? It's never going to really be the animation that lives in your imagination. You first perceived him as an animated character, you know, who lived in this fantastical world. And I got to give voice to that. So I live in your imagination as part of that character. But they come along, and they've got to put on a rubber suit, you know, and embody that fantastical kind of character in a three-dimensional world. So it always looks kind of weird. You know what I mean? And it will never, ever fulfill what you imagine or what I imagine. Because in your imagination, it's so rich. It's so unique. They're always going to look a little weird. Because let's face it, it's a guy in a rubber suit, you know? So I have a big advantage over those actors in that I don't have to put on that rubber suit. I can just live in my voice in your head and brainwash you.
Do you think if they ever did a Batman Beyond, saying they'd have to obviously age you up eventually?
But I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm not 80 yet.
No, but they can age you up like crazy prosthetics and have you play the old Bruce Wayne.
Oh, that'd be cool.
On the live action. Who would love to see that?
That'd be cool.
Okay, we had a question over here, and then we had a question over here, and then we'll fit two more in, and then that's the end, okay?
Hi, Kevin.
Hey.
Or should I say Bruce?
Hey.
You're always asked questions about Batman and stuff, I'm sure. But I can't help but notice you've never been asked about possibly your most important moment in your career, from the 1978 TV movie, How to Pick Up Girls.
Oh my God!
I looked at your IMDb.
There's always one.
I looked at your IMDb yesterday. So, how did that affect your career? did it help you get the ladies, as the title might suggest?
No. You know, when you're starting out, you got to make the rent. You know what I mean?
I'm not insulting you. That's
No. Look, I'm proud of everything I did, even the goofy stuff. I was on Dynasty. I mean, how goofy can you get? But I've been supporting myself since I was 17. How many actors can say that? I went to Juilliard on a full scholarship. I got my first apartment in New York.
I was waiting tables. I was a mail boy at a mail service out of Grand Central Terminal. I was living on my own at 17 in New York. And I never, once I stopped waiting tables, I was about 20. By the time I got into Juilliard, I was 21. From then on, I have never had to do anything but act. I've been supporting myself very nicely on acting. That's something.
Yeah.
You know, that's unusual. So along the way, I did some real doozies, like how to pick up girls. But they paid the rent, you know. The reason I first started doing voice work was because I trained, I thought, I'm going to be a Shakespearean actor. I will do the classics. I will train and I will be a wonderful Hamlet. I will do these great classic theater. And maybe occasionally I might do a film, but I'll never do TV because that's beneath me. You know, it was that old fashioned attitude about I'm a theater actor. Until I realized I couldn't even pay my rent when I was working in the theater. There's just not enough money. So the only way you can work in the theater in New York is if you do television or film or commercials. I discovered that all these Broadway actors I was working with were doing commercials because Madison Avenue's in New York. And the big thing to do on the side was voiceover commercials. And I had a good voiceover work. So the first voiceover I went in on, I was about 23, and it was Paco Rabanne cologne. What is remembered is up to you. Seven words. What is remembered is up to you. It's my first voiceover audition. I got it. Those seven words paid me like $25,000 over the course of a year. They paid my rent, they paid my insurance, they paid everything. They paid all the theater I was going to do. I thought, I am a pig in shit. I am so happy.
$25,000 for a voiceover?
Yeah.
People are signing up for voice acting tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. The trick is that I didn't get another one for like 5 years. I just happened to get the first one. And it was because I was doing commercial voiceovers that I happened to be in LA. My commercial voiceover agent said, oh, they're doing an animated show at Warner Brothers, a new show. Why don't you go over and try, give your hand at an animated voice. I said, I've never done any animation. He said, oh, just give it a shot. So I was totally improvising in that booth. I had no preconceptions about the character. I did not have a lot of background in the character. I'd never done an animated character. Batman was the first animated character I auditioned for.
Knocked it out of the park.
25 years.
Amazing. Okay, we got time for two more questions, folks. I'm really, really sorry, but Kevin is going to be at his table for the entire day. Okay, so we got one here and we got one in the center, all right?
Hey, I'm a big fan. I'd just like to ask, what is your opinion on Ben Affleck as Batman?
I think he surprised everybody, don't you?
Yeah.
Because let's face it, the internet was brutal to that guy when they announced he was going to do it. And I said, I'm proud to say, give him a break. Let's see what he does with it, because he's a good actor. And he's been fantastic. I think, you know, the trick to playing Batman is it's playing two roles. There's Bruce Wayne and there's Batman. A lot of people get one and don't get the other. I think, actually, of all the people who've done him live action, Ben Affleck has gotten the best at doing both. You know, he's a really good Bruce Wayne, and he's a good Batman. So I think he's the best at doing both characters.
That big action scene, you were talking about the fact that when people in their heads think of it, they think of it as an animated character. But that one big action scene in Batman vs. Superman, where Batman is taking out all the goons, that's the closest we've seen to the animated series and the comics in the movie.
In a live action.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
I agree.
Like, as much as people lambast that film, and I'm one of them, that is the closest you're going to see to Batman kicking ass.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? Yeah, beautiful. Question in the center. Guys, the questions are done now. This is the end of the panel question. But Kevin will be at his table for the rest of the convention.
Right, today.
So there you go, sir.
Good morning.
Hey, thank you.
I'm sure you've got a lot of arcs over the last few years with Batman v Superman, Justice League coming out. Who would have a fight, Batman or Superman? But I'm more interested in the Daily Show episode you did. Who would win out of a fight, you or Tim Daly?
Oh, come on.
Seriously? I could kick his ass.
On that note, folks, please put your hands together for Kevin Conroy.
Thank you.